Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And welcome to this edition of News in Focus. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. On this Thanksgiving Day, the 398th year in which the Pilgrims landed. In just a few years, we'll be celebrating the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrims landing. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance, and we have a special program for you today as pastor, author, and historian Paul Jaley is with us on the phone today. We're going to walk you through not only historical Plymouth, but what is happening in Plymouth, Massachusetts these days as they prepare for the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrim's Landing. Reading from the scriptures in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 16, 17, and 18. Rejoice evermore, pray without ceasing, in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. And tomorrow, of course, in Plymouth, there will be a reenactment of the church service in Plymouth, of the original Plymouth colony. And with us on the phone to talk about that in the 400th anniversary upcoming is Pastor Paul Jaley. Pastor, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you.
Well, Pastor, tomorrow you'll be out there in those cold temperatures reenacting the prayer procession. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. The Pilgrim Progress, which is a name given to the reenactment of the pilgrims going to their first meeting house site and reenacting a small church service, was started in 1921 in the town of Plymouth. And that means costumed reenactors will walk up the first street where the pilgrims actually walked up amongst their homes and to the beat of a drum, which is how it was described in an eyewitness in 1627. And then we'll go up to the burial hillside, or at least close to that, and then reenact. We sing a couple of psalms that the pilgrims would have sung from the Ainsworth Psalter. And then we'll give a short message. I will be Elder Brewster tomorrow, so I will be giving a very brief 3 or 4 minute talk that the pilgrims would have said. I weave it around all the writings that they have written. So we reenact it, and hundreds of tourists will come out for that on Thanksgiving Day.
Well, of course, also my wife and I had the pleasure of being with you in August. Of course, the temperatures were a little warmer then as we visited with you, and there was a reenactment of this procession, and we loved it. Obviously, the folks that dress up in all the regalia of the day and then walk through the town, and then all the tourists that are there in Plymouth get to witness this as you walk past the church and up Cemetery Hill and reenact the prayer service. And that was really wonderful. But really, the important work that you're doing there in Plymouth is really restoring our history. And, you know, obviously in just 2 years, we're going to be celebrating the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrim's Landing. Many That's really right. mark this, not Jamestown, but Plymouth as the beginning of our nation. Tell us a little bit about that, Paul. Why is that?
Sure. I mean, well, Jamestown is the place of the first, what we call the birth certificate of America. That's where the English settlement came in 1607. And, of course, they had went through some very difficult times, as did the pilgrims and whatnot. And there were some very godly people on those ships, like Pastor Robert Hunt and others. But the distance, the difference is that here it was a church plant. It was a church coming from Leiden that were together. There were individuals in Jamestown, many of whom were Christians, but they came as a fishing, an expedition village, really a replica of the English settlement and the English government. Whereas here, these were separatists. They had separated from the state church and had formed a covenant as a church body and then gone to Leiden, Holland, eventually, after spending a year in Amsterdam. And then, of course, they were harried out of the land by King James. And so here are these individuals that had made a covenant together. And about 75 out of a 350-strong church in Leiden were sent out, literally, to the wilderness to plant a church. And, of course, this made it very unique from Jamestown. It's distinct. We say that, you know, there's no question that Jamestown is the national birth certificate, but here in America, it's the hometown. It's the America's hometown. It's like the planting of self-government. And you need both, because in our nation, we're all Americans. We have a federal government, but really, the real life and vitality of the nation is at the local level, in the towns and the states. And that's really the distinction between Jamestown and Plymouth.
You know, the providential hand of God on this small group of Christians who were coming to the new world for freedom, for religious freedom, and to plant, as you say, a church. What was interesting, and I think as my wife and I had the pleasure of taking the tour through Plymouth and learning about, you know, they brought their women and how unique that was. And we're talking about they weren't there just for exploration and development and or to seek treasure. But they were there to plant families. They were there to plant a colony, and they brought their women. And so I think that was a very interesting, you know, families was what their treasure was. And they brought it with them.
No question, because the Pilgrims themselves, being a church plant, they really believed the family was such a vital part of that. And so they came as family units. That was very unique in that time period. Women and children didn't travel on ships much at all. And men simply went exploring and fishing and using the trades. And it was a very dangerous business. There was a great high probability you wouldn't come back. And so these kinds of things were very, very unique for them to come with the women and children. That also made a statement, because they were just practicing out their faith. And, you know, the natives may have seen that and may have said, gee, if you come with women and children, you're not coming the way other people do come. You're coming to stay. You're coming here for long-term impact, generational. And that's the kind of thing that makes the Plymouth Colony so unique. Here are these small pilgrims. They're already a remnant in England. And here they come, and they're even more of a remnant here. And, of course, they weren't planning to be in Plymouth. They were blown off course and ended up here and realized that though their original charter had taken them only to the northern part of Virginia, which would have been Manhattan, today, they then wrote the Mayflower Compact and wrote a document of self-government, displaying once again the wisdom that was given to them and trained them by their pastor, who had taught them on self-government and covenant, and that really, truly, you govern from the bottom up and the inside out, and people were going to adopt the rule of law by consent, whether you were in the church or not. I mean, not everybody was a separatist that was on the Mayflower. You had hired hands, and you also had individuals who were in the Church of England. And so here you had this body, and they formed the Mayflower Compact, and it would have been common for them to think, gee, this church is, you know, if you're not part of the church, you're going to be ruled by the church somehow, by the top down. And instead, they were ruled by law, setting a precedent that made America unique.
You know, one of the things we like to do at our household on Thanksgiving is to read the Mayflower Compact. And here it is. In the name of God, amen, whose names are underwritten, the loyal subjects of our dread sovereign Lord King James, by the grace of God, of Great Britain, France, and Ireland, King Defender of the Faith, having undertaken for the glory of God an advancement of the Christian faith and honor of our king and country, a voyage to plant the first colony in the northern parts of Virginia, do by these presents solemnly and mutually in the presence of God and one another, covenant and combine ourselves together into a civil body politic for our better ordering and preservation and furtherance of the ends aforesaid, and by virtue hereof to enact, constitute, and frame such just and equal laws, ordinances, acts, constitutions, and offices from time to time as shall be thought most meet and convenient for the general good of the colony, unto which we promise all due submission and obedience. In witness thereof, whereof we have hereto subscribed our names at Cape Cod on the 11th of November in the reign of our sovereign Lord King James of England, France, Ireland, and the 18th of Scotland, 54th, 1620. This is the Mayflower Compact, signed by John Carver, William Bradford, Edward Wilson, William Brewster. The list goes on. Miles Standish. These are the folks who entered into this compact and this contract. Talk to us a little bit about that, Paul.
Yes, and of course they had been trained about covenant from their pastor, who had taught them that the Bible's articulation of covenant was so strong that you came together. What made a church was two or three gathered together in Christ's name, Christ in being the head of the church. John Robinson, the pastor of the Pilgrims, had come to the conclusion that the state churches of England were married to the civil government rather than Christ. And so he made this bold declaration that really you can have a church with two or three believers, and they're the highest authority because they're the kings and the priests that God talks about. And then out from their consent come the ruling elders and the pastor. And this is this idea that submission comes to the rule of law and not the rule of a person. And so even the Mayflower Compact, when you look at the first phrase there, in the name of God, amen, then we whose names are underwritten, and then the king. So the God's power comes from himself to the people and then to the government, which of course would be repeated again in many of the documents throughout American history, not the least of which is the Declaration of Independence. So you have this clear charter, and of course the Pilgrims would write a constitution also 16 years later in 1636, and that constitution would be their bylaws. You have a charter and bylaws. And so the Pilgrims themselves governed in this way, and it set a precedent in American history that's very powerful, that still we see it today. We see the roots in our constitution. We see the roots in the way we were structured. But it all comes back to that teaching. I mean, John Robinson even wrote a letter to them as they went on board the Speedwell before they would unite with the Mayflower and come to the New World. And he said, listen, when you have a civil government, vote for people not based on what they say, not based on their clothing or outward style, but based on the content of their character and their true history, who they are, how they have made decisions in the past. And, you know, you look at these things and you say, man, this was pioneering. There hadn't been a group of people who could freely vote and constitute a government for hundreds of years, not since Israel chose a king. And so you look at this and you say, man, there was no actual freedom. And here they did, on the deck of the Mayflower, write this Mayflower Compact. When you think about it, the providence of God is unmistakable, and also how unique that was. Every nation at that time had some kind of power. You had in the king or the monarch. Maybe the only place that they could have gone was the Netherlands, which had some toleration of religion, but it was still government granted. And so this was a real huge pioneering step for liberty.
We're talking with Paul Jaley. He is the executive director of the Plymouth Rock Foundation. He is also pastor, senior pastor of the New Testament Church in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Paul, the work that you've been doing is a lifelong work. You were the understudy of a former historian that gave you the depth and breadth of the history of the Pilgrims there in Plymouth and throughout really the region. And it really is a story of evangelism, of the Native Americans that surrounded the Pilgrim landing and the interaction that they had with their fellow brothers, as they would call them, as they came to faith in Christ and had all things in common in the sense that they had fellowship. And it wasn't a exploitation that we're often told. And there is this conflict and a rewriting of history. But there were two views looking at the Native Americans. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I mean, the real problem that we have today is that, unfortunately, in the name of Christ, there were those who felt the best way to, quote, evangelize was to dominate. And dating all the way back to 1452, when the papal bull was written, it basically said, look, you go dominate, take land, make them slaves, and force them to convert. And this is the unfortunate history that overshadows all those that come afterwards. Even if their motives were a bit different, you have this domineering idea, and that's what many people did. And you have the Jesuits, and you have others that are dominating people, taking their lands. And so the Pilgrims were part of a remnant movement that was trying to make a declaration, though they weren't the most influential, so you don't hear a lot about it historically. But when you read their writings, you realize, no, this is not the way to go. In fact, you know, you should have a desire to evangelize voluntarily, and to do that in such a way that people are blessed, and you don't steal their land. You make a trade for that land. You voluntarily gain title to the land. you serve people. You should go for the glory of God, not the glory of gold or the glory of conquering or power. And these are the kinds of contrasts that we often miss in history. And the Pilgrims were part of this remnant view. Now, of course, they weren't perfect, and you're going to have hotheads on any group, and you're going to have people who don't follow even the rule that you want. But at the same time, this was why the Pilgrims came, and that's why they wanted to make peace with the natives as early as they could. They were under instructions, so to speak, goals. Even Robert Cushman in Mort's Relation gives a highlight of the goals that they must have. They had to defend this theologically. Why would anybody leave England and go to some wilderness to preach the gospel? Now, you know, the people were questioning that. Why not preach the gospel to your neighbor right in England if you feel so strongly about it? And so there had to be, in essence, they were the missionaries from England, even though England didn't look at them as their prized possession. Here they were being sent out and coming here. Now, they believed strongly that the best way to evangelize someone was to live the life you preached, and then out of that example of character, you preach a message. And that's a whole lot different than landing on the shore and just claiming the land for the king and then going in and dominating. Now, obviously, they had to come with the king's permission. So there was some of that terminology and language still there. But their actions inspired others. And the Puritans as well that came after them that were evangelists, like John Eliot and Richard Bourne and others, that really witnessed a phenomenal revival here in the 1600s, from the 1630s right through to the 1670s and 80s. And in spite of the terrible King Philip's War, which occurred, and the fact that the third generation no longer honored the covenants made with the Native Americans in the first, those are lessons we can learn today. But certainly the Pilgrims were part of this remnant who came as servant leaders. And this is some of the things we need to recognize, because unfortunately the same idea is there. There are believers today who feel, hey, the best thing to do is just go in and conquer, take it by force, and look, that's not the way of Christ. And this is what we can see in history. So when really teaching the Pilgrim story in its context, you see, wow, these people were unique. They were never numerous, never the most wealthy, but individuals that really wanted to come with an attitude that we could agree with. And those are the kinds of things that when you teach the history in its context, you realize, hey, they weren't perfect people. In fact, every event in history has both good and bad, because you got people involved. You got sinful desires involved. You got people who want to become powerful themselves. No culture is perfect and no group is perfect. But when we see the providential hand of God and we see the true motives of these individuals and the fruit that came from it, we can say, wow, this was truly an example of what it's like to send a bunch of Christians who truly want to live out their faith into a wilderness and say, go ahead, start a church, and out of it, start a nation built on the rule of law and built on representative government by consent of the governed, on the cornerstone of self-government, and you're going to have what's going to come of it? Well, eventually, though the seeds planted, they probably never could have envisioned the kind of nation we have today. Still, here are these seeds, and they grew up into fruit, and we have today, much in the United States of America, can be traced back to the roots of these Pilgrims.
If they had landed a little north, there were hostile tribes. If they had landed a little south from where they had landed, there were hostile tribes. But right where they had landed, there was a tribe that was wiped out by a smallpox epidemic, and there was actually fresh water at that place as well, where Plymouth is. God's providential hand was upon them, this small, fragile colony, this church plant,
pious people. The natives on Cape Cod actually fired arrows at them because they had been wronged. You know, the interesting thing is the natives along the shore here, they'd been robbed of 20 of their own men in 1614 by Thomas Hunt from England. And so he had feigned trading with them and took them as slaves and took them over to Europe. And though he couldn't show his face, thankfully, they recognized what a horrible character he was. And when Squanto came back, even a year and a half before the Pilgrims arrived, part of the reason was to try to amend these terrible things that the Englishmen had done. So the Pilgrims, though they didn't do it, they had to suffer. And isn't that a lesson for us today, that other people who do crazy things in the name of Christ and call it Christian when it's not, we suffer from it. It takes time. It took them time to win the confidence of the natives. And although we could say they saw the difference right away, they came as families. And within 4 months, they did have a peace treaty with them, the Wampanoags. And so, yes, you could see that they did see they were different in some way. But it takes time for two different cultures to begin to trust one another, and that's why your character is so important.
Absolutely. We're talking with Pastor Paul Jaylee, a historian and author, and conducts reenactments there in Plymouth, Massachusetts. If you've never been, you need to go to Plymouth. And if you've not gone in some time, and maybe you really never took in the tour and the historical landmarks of Plymouth, you need to get back to Plymouth. And that's why we're saying return to Plymouth, returning to our roots. And as Christians, that we understand this founding of this church plant. We're approaching the 400th anniversary, and we're working with Pastor Paul and the team, and we hope that there'll be a vice presidential or a presidential visit in the 400th anniversary in the year 2020. And lots of celebration is gearing up. The town itself, we just have a few minutes left. We're going to be on this. Those of you that can stay with us for part two, Paul's going to continue. We're going to get in depth into the events that are being planned for the 400th anniversary. But right now, even the Mayflower has been refitted, and it's going to be relaunched this spring. So lots of activity and excitement around the town of Plymouth. Tell us a little bit about that. We have about 2 minutes left, Paul.
Sure. Well, the town of Plymouth, called Plymouth 400, Inc., you can get that on the web. They have several events that are being planned, and we'll be very much a part of those. I serve on the board as the chairman of the Faith Subcommittee, which means that I'm going to be helping with their events to see that the faith of the pilgrims, their true motive for coming, is expressed. But we're also going to do an event, the Plymouth Rock Foundation, called the American Pilgrimage 400. And you can go to the website, www.plymrock.org, and read all about it. This is going to be an event dealing with drama, reenactments. We're going to have patriotic music. We're going to reenact the landing and see the reenactment done, and a complete dramatic production of the Pilgrim story. It's going to be something you don't want to miss, from June 28 to July 2nd of 2020. People need to mark their calendars now and help us put it on. You can invest $40 per individual and $400 for a church or ministry, and we just need hundreds of Americans to do that for us to be able to put this on. So we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a tremendous time to remember the faith of the Pilgrims.
And also, just Google Plymouth Rock Foundation, or PLYMROCK.org. That's Plymouth Rock Foundation. Just Google that. The link is also on our website. You can contribute to the effort and be part of retaining our history. And folks, this is so important. So I encourage you to go back to Plymouth. And we're going to be talking about an opportunity to get there this year in August. Paul, do you have some events that are coming this year as well?
Sure. There are events that are going to be coming up in the summer, and we're planning them now. And so, yeah, it's early August, and people can come. They can experience that pilgrim progress, get just a glimpse into why the pilgrims came here as we continue to prepare for big events in 2020. We just finished America's Hometown Thanksgiving celebration here in Plymouth, where hundreds and thousands of people lined the streets as we demonstrated how unique America is, with a phenomenal parade, chronological. Thousands of people came, and you can go right on the website and see some clips from it.
We're talking with Paul Jaylee, who is pastor and historian from Plymouth, Massachusetts. Go to PlymouthRockFoundation.org. Thanks for listening today. God bless you and your family, and happy Thanksgiving. Those of you that could stay with us, please do, for part two of Returning to Plymouth.
Looking out for seniors today. It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do, TrustBlueReview.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
And we're back with Pastor Paul Jaley from Plymouth Rock Foundation. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. And we're going to go to a clip right now from PBS from a special a couple years ago about the Pilgrims. Let's go there now.
Summer was fading fast, and the window for attempting the long and dangerous ocean crossing had already started to close. When on September 6th, 1620, an aging 180-ton ship called the Mayflower weighed anchor off Plymouth, off the south coast of England, and set out on her own across the North Atlantic on what would prove to be one of the most historic voyages of the millennium.
It's worth reminding ourselves that at the time they were a very, very small group of very extreme people. And if we'd never heard of them ever again, nobody would be surprised. And most English people thought that they were well rid of them. The fact that they are, in the long term, extraordinarily successful, that they've found the world's greatest democracy, throws retrospective luster. They are, one might say, if you wanted to be critical, they're religious nutters who won't settle for anything except the most literal reading of the Bible. They want to transform a nation state into something that resembles what they take to be a godly kingdom.
They weren't the people that you would expect to be founding a new colony. They weren't soldiers. They were not emissaries of a foreign government. They were not particularly well provided with supplies. At least half of them were separatists, that is to say, radical Protestants, who were religious exiles, who had been living in Leiden, the Dutch Republic. They weren't the people you would automatically expect to be founding a new outpost of the British Empire.
They were in many ways the least likely of task forces for establishing a permanent English presence in the New World. Fewer than 50 of the 102 passengers were adult men, many well past their physical prime. At least 30 were children, and nearly 20 were women, including three expectant mothers. By the time they set sail, England had still not succeeded in establishing a truly viable colony on the shores of the New World, and their chances of survival, let alone success, were all but nil.
When you look at Jamestown, Virginia, by 1620, they'd pumped in something like 8,000 colonists there, and yet they were struggling to keep the numbers above 1,000. The death rate was awful. So it was a very dangerous step to even contemplate, especially given the number of people on the Mayflower.
They don't register at all numerically. It's a tiny handful of people, many of whom don't survive. We're thinking about migration to the Americas in the 17th and 18th century. We're talking about 10 million Africans, for instance, as against this tiny handful of English men and women.
The fascinating thing, then, about the Pilgrim story is how this tiny group of people managed to get by and managed to tell the story in such a way as to erase that whole other history. ask people, where does America start? They'll say, it starts in Plymouth Rock.
That is a clip from a PBS special from just a few years ago, The Pilgrims. With me on the phone is pastor and historian Paul Jaley, who is from Plymouth, Massachusetts, and conducts reenactments and also conducts historical tours of ancient Plymouth. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. We want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. I'm reading here from The Light and the Glory. That's Peter Marshall's book from a few years ago. On page 117, the heat and the pressure began soon after they got underway. 102 pilgrims huddled in the lantern-lit darkness of the low ceiling, two decks. Women and small children allowed to have the captain's cabin. Jones had generously offered to bunk with his petty officers. No hatches opened because of continuous storms. All non-essential personnel required to stay below decks and constant crying of small children. No chance to cook any meals. It added up to 7 weeks of hell of ill-lighted, rolling, pitching, stinking inferno, the kind that brings up sins that had lain buried for years. Anger, self-pity, bitterness, vindictiveness, jealousy, despair, all these surface sins had to be faced, confessed, and given up to the Lord for His cleansing. No matter how ill they felt or how grim the daily situation, they continued to seek God together, praying through despair into peace and thanksgiving. This is from The Light and the Glory, a great book by Peter Marshall. Pastor, this is a time, you actually live this every day of the year in your teaching and your history and sharing the passion of this story with people who come from around the country. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, we have the opportunity and the privilege of being able to walk the streets where the pilgrims lived, and whether it's my colleagues or myself giving tours there on a regular basis. Walking tours for people to see that these pilgrims were normal people. There's a human element to the story. Though they have they accomplished great things, they would never have said that was because of them or how special they were. They would have given all the glory to God. They believed that God was going to use them, however humble or meek they were, had no finances, very little people. And yet, look what God did. In fact, that's why William Bradford, by the year 1630, could see in 10 years' time that the pilgrims had made such an impact and an influence, not by their numbers, not by their wealth, not by their brawn, not because they're trying to force anything. But even the Puritans began to change their view of government. The Puritans even began to become a lot more compassionate toward their neighbors because of the pilgrims. And that's why Bradford gave that famous quote as, "One small candle may light 1,000, so the light here kindled hath shone unto many. Yea, in some sort to our whole nation, let the glorious name of Jehovah have all the praise." See, this wasn't their doing. They gave all that praise to God, that they were the one small candle, and yet that influenced so many people. So that's why we love telling this story, because we want to brag on God. We don't brag on the pilgrims, per se. They're not perfect, and they would never have wanted that. But all the monuments that are in downtown Plymouth, most of them put up in 1920 for the tercentenary celebration, and others are remembering that. That's why we would love to get a statue up in 2020 or a little bit later if we could raise the funds, because we want to have John Robinson, pastor of the Pilgrims, erected in Plymouth to remind people that it was a church plant that came. These people were all covenanted together in the church, and they were those who weren't part of the church who came, but they were influenced by it. And, you know, you see these kinds of principles lived out. We often don't look at these things with intensity like you'd have to if you were on the hold of a ship like that for 66 days, rocking back and forth, seawater leaking in the top, and you crammed below deck. This would be a very difficult time for anyone. 66 days, that's a long time. And yet, out from that, Bradford, when he writes his Up Plymouth Plantation book, he constantly refers to scriptures and to God that, look, this has been a phenomenal blessing. This is what God did. He uses the illustration when they had to send 20 or 25 back when the Speedwell sprung leaks and then left from the Plymouth Harbor. He said, look, like Gideon's 400, God thought these many too many for the special work he had to do. So, you know, you have all these things that God was doing through them. And then when you come to that harvest festival of Thanksgiving, which we could talk about, people are going to be enjoying Thanksgiving dinner. Well, what did the pilgrims eat? What kind of a festival was it? Where did it come from? All those things are tremendous things to share, because here are these people, as Christians, coming into the wilderness, and that not everybody's Christian that's around them, and not everybody's Christian that's in the colony. It's very, that becomes true very, very quickly, and even from the very start. And yet you see the great things that were done. So yes, it's a tremendous story. It's worth telling and retelling to our children and grandchildren.
This is a time where many people are starting to think about visiting Plymouth again, and it's a great opportunity. In fact, obviously with Boston so near, just to the north, you want to take in Freedom Trail as well and learn about our American founding in the Revolutionary War times. You know, Pastor, one of the things I really enjoyed when we came and visited with you this last time was the greater area of around Plymouth and Richard Bourne, and we saw the marker where it's believed that he may be buried nearby there. Tell us about missionary Richard Bourne.
Sure. Well, Richard Bourne was one of the individuals who had been discipled and influenced by, I should say, John Eliot. And Richard Bourne came, and his goal was to be a missionary. Initially, he came into Sandwich. The area of Sandwich is just below the Cape Cod Canal today. And there he became a leader in both the church and the Commonwealth. But he had this heart to reach the natives, and so he learned their language. And he began to share with them. And lo and behold, as he said, a great providence began to take place where many of these natives became converted. In fact, the revivals are so astounding in many ways that hundreds of individual natives became Christians across the Cape. And here you have Richard Bourne, who not only preaches to them, but he serves them. In fact, I don't know of any other white missionary at the time ministering among natives where the natives called him the white sachem. They looked at him because he would minister to them during their sickness. He was a surveyor of roads. He protected their rights that they not be dominated. There were certain sects of the Puritans that would dominate other cultures, be they Quakers or other, that domination philosophy would still seep in and operate. And here Richard Bourne had this tremendous servant-like heart and a real example of what Christianity really should be, because it wasn't just the words he was giving, it was the way he was living. And Richard Bourne, of course, is in the 1600s. He's ministering right here, right alongside the Pilgrims. And though he's not a member of the Pilgrim Church, per se, he's a part of the churches around the area that wanted to preach the gospel of the kingdom. And so he's a tremendous illustration and example of what it would really be like to truly serve another culture and lay your life down for them. And that's why it's so powerful. And the Pilgrims did this in their example and the way they ministered to people also. They kind of believed that, you know, your character was to help people to trust you. If they trust the messenger, they might trust the message. And this is why when the Pilgrims shared the gospel, they would do it through the Ten Commandments. And this is very much like the other Puritan ministers like Richard Bourne. And they would share the commandments because if you don't know God's standard, you don't know you need a Savior. And then they would begin to minister about the Redeemer and came to the conclusion that many of the natives worshiped the same God, the Creator. The Great Spirit, they believed, was the Creator, God, as Edward Winslow said. And they just wanted to introduce them to the Redeemer. And so you have this tremendous movement that takes place all the way through the 1600s to the place that whole native tribes get converted and begin to adopt some of the Ten Commandments as the base of their law. And you have praying Indian villages, up to 15 of them in New England. And so, and interestingly enough, these big boulders that once had been used maybe for animal sacrifices, and there's some evidence of some type of human sacrifices at times, but still, this turns into a pulpit rock when they preach the gospel. Jesus Christ was persecuted for you. He was the one that took the punishment on your behalf. And so you have these various areas of evangelism by example that were part of what the Pilgrims did. Even though they weren't involved directly in all of those things, they were in harmony with it. So these are the things that happened. And Edward Winslow, the Pilgrim ambassador who learned the Indian tongue, was also a great example of this. And this is Edward Winslow when he joined the church back in Leiden. He was only 23. Then he got married there, and then he came over on the Mayflower and became the ambassador. And he was the one that wrote that letter home after the first Thanksgiving, which was probably October of 1621. And when we say first Thanksgiving, we don't mean the first time someone thanked God on the Eastern Seaboard. That's new crazy. The natives were thanking God. The English colonies all did that. But a unique opportunity for a three-day feast. Think about it, that, you know, when people sit down for Thanksgiving, Edward Winslow wrote this, "Our harvest being gotten in, our governor sent four men on fowling, that so might we have a special manner to rejoice together after we had gathered the fruit of our labors. They four in one day killed as much fowl as, with a little help aside, served the company almost a week, at which time, amongst other recreations, we exercised our arms, many of the Indians coming amongst us, and among the rest their greatest king, Massasoit, with some 90 men, whom we for 3 days we entertained and feasted, and they went out and killed 5 deer, which they brought to the plantation and bestowed on our governor, and upon the captain and others. And although it be not always so plentiful as it was at the time, yet by the goodness of God, we are far from want and wish you to be partakers of our plenty." That was written by Edward Winslow back to England in 1622, less than a year after that Thanksgiving. And the whole idea was, hey, come and join us, that more people would come. It was a three-day fast. Only 4 adult women were left alive, pilgrim adult women. And remember, 90 natives came. So that's 140 people. Imagine that at your Thanksgiving dinner. All dishes were wooden. The children served the adults. The meal probably consisted of cod and sea bass, fowl, ducks, geese, swan, deer, wild turkeys, and it included athletic events. So, you know, in spite of the fact that people today say, oh, it's become so commercialized, yes, it is, but the idea of athletics being tied into Thanksgiving is actually historically accurate. So it's amazing. Here, giving thanks to God for all your bounty. Now, when you research the history of these things, there was a harvest festival at times taking place in England. It could possibly have been researched and written from the Feast of Tabernacles, because that was called the Feast of Thanksgiving and Ingathering. And these are traditions. I mean, the pilgrims operated by the Jewish calendar. March was their new year. They really were conscious of these things. So when you see all these things put together, you see, wow, we have a lot to remember. And I suggest you just read part of what Edward Winslow wrote about the first Thanksgiving. You can Google it and get it online, and read it to the people who gather around the table. Let people know this was not something that was done out of plenty, but sacrifice. And certainly they were thankful to God for the small harvest they had, and especially the peace that they had secured in March of the same year with their native neighbors, that they could do this. Imagine natives and Englishmen wrestling, having bow and arrow, gun contests. I wish they kept the score, but they didn't.
We're talking with Pastor.
True friendship.
That's right. We're talking with Pastor Paul Jaley, author and historian, and we're talking about Plymouth, Massachusetts, and we're talking about the 400th anniversary is coming. This is the 398th year of the Pilgrim's Landing. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back on the other side. We're going to talk about the Forefathers Monument that was erected, in 1920. That would have been the 300th anniversary, thereabouts.
Actually, 1889, yeah.
And we're going to talk about the Forefathers Monument. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
And we have our Thanksgiving service, actually, this special edition of News in Focus. I'm reading from the book of Nehemiah, chapter 8, when the reading of the law was conducted before the children of Israel, and they realized that they had gotten away from God. It says, "This day is holy unto the Lord, because the people began to weep when they heard the law of God for the first time in many years. This day is holy unto the Lord your God. Mourn not, nor weep, for all the people wept when they heard the words of the law. Then he said, go your way, eat the fat, drink the sweet, and send portions unto them to whom nothing is prepared, for this day is holy unto the Lord. Neither be ye sorry, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. And we pray that you have joy this Thanksgiving season with your family and with your brethren. Well, we're talking with Pastor Paul Jaley from Plymouth, Massachusetts, and we're going to talk about the Forefathers Monument that was erected in honor of who we are as an American nation. Pastor, when was it first erected?
It was laid in 1859, and it was completed in 1889. So it was under construction for 30 years. The original size was supposed to be twice the size of what it is. It's 81 feet tall now, but it was supposed to be a little over 160 feet tall, which would have made it a little bit more comparable to the Statue of Liberty. But this actually idea for this monument came much earlier than the Statue of Liberty, and we have the idea that this was often called Faith Monument because a tall statue of faith stands at the top. She's pointing to heaven, only one way to God through Christ. She holds a Geneva Bible blown open by the wind. And her foot is on Plymouth Rock, and there's a star on her forehead dealing with the honor of the intellect or reasoning from Scripture to every area of life. And so you have this depiction of the faith that brought the pilgrims. In fact, the whole monument stands in the nautical direction from which the pilgrims sailed from England. And when you look at these symbols that Hammett Billings put on this monument of both the history of the pilgrims and the symbols of the Scriptures, you begin to realize, wow, this monument is in an ornate way, a large monument standing in Plymouth, has come to down through the ages to stand and tell us why they actually came. They didn't come for fame and glory, didn't come for gold, they didn't come for profit, though all of that what they would need. They came because of faith. They came for the glory of God. And even though they couldn't have envisioned the way the seed of liberty would have brought forth a commonwealth like we have today, they carried that desire. And so they desired. The pilgrims were known as the most tolerant of individuals with those who differed with them, of all those who came over at the time. And remember, toleration was certainly not something that was practiced often on any side in Europe at the time. And you recognize that this is the pilgrim story, that pilgrim monument, the pilgrim forefathers monument. It says they depicts the cause of civil and religious liberty. Religious liberty is on the inside, civil liberty on the outside. And when you stop respecting someone's right to believe from their conscience, you're going to stop respecting their civil liberty as well. And this is one of the dangers we see today. If every difference between a person is termed as hate, if every difference between two people are automatically put us on opposite sides as if we can no longer talk, we're in trouble. That's why we need to go back and say, look, where did we begin? Where did we get these liberties, and why should we preserve them? And the National Monument of the Forefathers is one of the most powerful statements to that. We've got videos of that monument tour that we do that are available online. We have those things, as well as the book that I wrote, Plymouth and the Words of Her Founders, which you can get right online at the plymrock.org website or Googling Plymouth Rock Foundation. These things are imperative, and of course, we're going to have tours of all these monuments in 2020, June 28 to July 2nd. And if you go on, you can find out how you can help us to be able to put on this event.
What is that contact if people want to contribute towards the effort in the 400th celebration?
Once again, plymrock.org, Plymouth Rock Foundation's website, and you can just scroll down on that homepage and you'll come right to the event, American Pilgrimage 400, and get all the information you need to be able to donate, to be able to invest, pray with us, become a volunteer. And these things are imperative because, you know, we look at America and we say it's providential when these huge events come up, the 100th anniversary of something, the 200th anniversary of something. Well, how many of us will celebrate the 400th anniversary in our lifetimes of anything? And obviously, it's not as old as something in England, but in Europe, but we can see that this is a powerful providential opportunity for believers, particularly, and others, Americans, to come together in 2020, June 28 to July 2nd, and rehearse our roots, where we came from, and how the faith of Christianity can change a life and change our character to such a way that we would serve other people and serve other people in such a way we can influence them and watch God providentially work.
You know, if you've not ever been to Plymouth, you need to do this. You need to visit the Jenny Museum, of course, which they conduct tours. And Leo and Martin conducts tours through Plymouth. He actually worked the grist mill from there many years. Tell us about the grist mill, because that was the grist mill there now is on the foundation of the first grist mill in America.
That's right. And this grist mill was started by John Jenny in 1636, and it was an indication of free enterprise because the Pilgrims birthed that when they went from a communal system to everyone owning individual lands in 1623. The result of that is here John Jenny could come and build a mill on the river. Now, that was so inspirational because free enterprise was not something that was practiced either in England or much in the New World initially. But it was so... It was so inspirational. There were 14 mills on that river at one time. And Leo Martin, one of the great storytellers, always number one on TripAdvisor when you just go on there for his walking tours, will be able to tell you about these tours and the Pilgrims and the grist mill. But also, he is the Jenny Museum will have this entire story of the Pilgrims put in a faith context, and that's what makes it so powerful. So, yeah, you can come, you can get a tour almost any day other than Sunday, and we do those by special arrangements, and you can walk the streets of Plymouth with Leo Martin in costume, and you'll hear stories that will just inspire you to go back home and to live out your faith in a greater way.
So if you're thinking of traveling to Plymouth this year on your vacation, you're wondering where to go, go to Plymouth, Massachusetts. Go to Boston Freedom Trail at the same time and take in this rich area of history in our nation. Pastor, thank you so much for keeping our history alive there in Plymouth and, you know, in such a godly way in which you keep alive the faith of the Pilgrims that came. And thank you so much, and God bless you, my friend.
God bless you, and happy Thanksgiving to all. And let's remember our roots.
Absolutely. And if you've missed any of today's program, you can hear it in its completion at our website at ohioca.org. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. God bless you all. And take time to give thanks for all that God has given to us. God bless.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.